He was vice president of Kenya for years. Now William Ruto is its president. But is he up to the job? And what's his plan to tackle the country's many problems? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the programme. I'm Kim Vanell. On Monday, the head of Kenya's Electoral Commission declared Deputy President William Ruto winner, nearly a week after the presidential vote. It was a narrow victory, with official results showing Ruto gained just over half of the votes at 50.5%, while Raila Odinga received 48.8%. But just before the results were announced, four election commissioners cast doubt on the results, while Raila Odinga's agent also disputed them, alleging irregularities. Odinga is a former prime minister, and this was his fifth attempt at running for president. He received the endorsement of his longtime rival, President Uhuru Kenyatta. But results show Ruto won in Mount Kenya, President Kenyatta's stronghold. Before we go to our guests, here is Harry Mutasa from Kisumu.
Most Kenyans are worried about bread and butter issues. It's about the economy. How are they going to feed their family? How are they going to pay school fees at a time when the economy is really, really struggling? Many families say the high cost of food prices and rising inflation is making it really, really difficult for them to make ends meet. President-elect William Ruto says he's going to turn around the economy and help low-income households survive. He says he'll do that by introducing social welfare programs and subsidies. But economists say that is not going to be easy for him to do. This country is heavily in debt. It borrowed a lot of money from countries such as China to build infrastructure projects. But that money has to be paid back. And economists say it's Kenyan taxpayers who end up doing that. So Kenyans hope that the economy is going to be turned around by him. Right now, a lot of things aren't going well in the country. For example, behind me, some businesses are closed, partly because of the political uncertainty, but also because for months, many businesses have been struggling. So Kenyans are looking to see if he's going to offer them anything new. Haru Mutasa for Inside Story.
Well, let's bring in our guests, all joining us from Kenya's capital, Nairobi. We have Dennis Ntumbi, campaign secretary for President-elect William Ruto. Nerima Waka-Ochiwa, executive director of Siasa, a non-profit that works on youth political engagement in Kenya. And we have Bobby Mkangi, a constitutional lawyer and former member of the committee of experts that wrote Kenya's new constitution. A very warm welcome to you all. I'd like to start with you, Dennis Ntumbi. You were the campaign secretary for the now president-elect. How are you feeling with the results and with the fact that not all the election commissioners were endorsing the results?
Thank you very much, and greetings to viewers. We are elated. We are thankful to God that the elections were announced to the favor of the well-being of this nation, and that the process was the most integrous process that I have and as a nation we've ever gone through. I think we have to give it to IBC this time for, giving us a process that had almost negligible administrative flaws, perhaps from the election day, the deployment of KIEMS kit. The voting process was largely peaceful. And also the process of validation and verification was one of the most truthful and open process this country has ever gone through. In fact, it will be established as a case study across the world. I don't think there's any global process that a global electoral process that has been as open as we have ever seen. And we are thankful to God that there is a strong progression in terms of electoral democracy in this country. So we are very elated, and we are looking forward to essentially a government that is going to be inclusive and a government that is going to, perform, absolute surgery to the issues that are affecting this nation.
Mr. Ntumbi, we'll come back to the future in a moment, but you didn't answer my question. Four election commissioners cast doubt on the results. What's your reaction to that?
Our reaction to that is that I was on the floor of the Bomas. I was privy to the dealings. In fact, the vice chair, who is a part of the team that is complaining, read the results of 22 constituencies. And we are surprised that she's part of the team that is complaining, They were involved all through. And, you know, if there's anybody who has issues, I think they should, you know, go through the constitutional mechanisms to complain. I think now they have, the law provides, the constitution provides 7 days, you know, towards the litigation and 14 days towards the same. We are confident that the process was verifiable, and we don't see issues from our end whatsoever. And the law is very clear that it is the chairman of the commission that is the presidential returning officer and the one constitutionally obligated to then call the president-elect to being.
Okay, so you're happy to see the process through. Nerima Wakaol-Chiwa, Raila Odinga obviously isn't happy. Should we expect his supporters to continue protesting? And what's the feeling among young people in the country? How did they vote?
Well, thank you for having me. This time around, the turnout was a little bit low compared to what we're used to at 65%. When you look at the overall number that could vote, 22.1 million, 39.8% were young people. And young people are between the age of 18 to 35 in Kenya, which was about 8.8 million. So young people already a little bit fewer from 2017. They were 50% of the voters bloc. So there's a big dip. Many of them just decided not to particularly participate. When we look at this particular election, both coalitions, very, very strong, garnering half of the country, both of them. So, yes, one side is extremely elated and excited. Another is grieving. And even this afternoon, he did mention in a press briefing that he is going to take the matter to court. So some of his supporters are excited about that. Some of them are feeling drained and frustrated about the entire process. And time will tell. Mm. They do have the right to do so if they feel that the process was not adequate enough for them.
Okay, Bobby Mkangi, from a legal perspective, with the legal challenge that looks likely to happen, how does it work? What should we expect in the coming weeks?
Well, as my co-panelist has just said, Honorable Raila Odinga this afternoon did mention that he and his coalition party, Azimio, will seek, if I may quote him, all constitutional and legal options. And so we are to assume that he's going to file a petition in the Supreme Court seeking the invalidation of Chairperson Wafula Chebukati's pronouncement yesterday. So the Constitution does state that after the declaration, any person, so it does not have to be the contestant, it's any Kenyan, who feels that they have an issue with the process and the declaration. They have a period of 7 days, and that begins counting from today and ending next Tuesday, to present their case before the Supreme Court of Kenya. And as Dennis earlier said, the Supreme Court will have 14 days to hear, to receive evidence and also for respondents, whoever they will be, to file their defenses. Mm. And at the end of the day, after 14 days, there will be a determination. And the determination can go two ways only, either validate the pronouncement from the chairperson, which means that the president-elect will be moving forward now towards being sworn in, which will be after 7 days, or invalidation, which whose only route now will be a fresh election, which must be conducted within 60 days of the Supreme Court's decision.
Okay, Bobby Mkangi, before we move on from you, you've explained the process and you know the constitutional basis for this. My question is, do people trust the process? Do people trust the courts? Will they accept whatever the result is?
Well, they don't have an option but to accept. Whether they agree with the decision or not, that's you know, their prerogative. And right now, this will be the third time if we have petitions since the Constitution was promulgated in 2010. The first election in 2013, There are petitions, similarly in 2017. And now, if we do have one, this will be the third time that Kenyans are being visited with this scenario. So at the end of the day, there are those who will be happy with the decision that the Supreme Court will arrive at, and those will not be happy with it. But as I said earlier, accept it, they have to, because that's what the Constitution demands and prescribes. Agree with, that's a prerogative of each and every Kenyan and other people globally.
Dennis Ntumbi, assuming that the Supreme Court validates these results and everything goes through for Mr. Ruto, how does he plan to unite the country? I mean, the numbers speak for themselves. It was an almost equal proportion of people, almost, not quite, who don't believe that he's up to the job.
I agree. One of the things that we have to look at the democracy within the voting electorate is that it is not equally proportionate to the entire percentage of the nation. And therefore, we have a segment of people that essentially getting the government of the day into play. But the president sits as a symbol of nation unity. There are specific instruments and chapters and articles in the Constitution that then ratify him to be the president of the entire nation. And so one of the opportunities that His Excellency William Samoei Ruto has is to unite the country, and his campaign has largely been about unity. You realize that if you study the thematics of this campaign, one of the things that was not present in Kenya is tribalism. And why was that not there? Because the unifying factor that he brought on board was about the socioeconomic development of the people, according to Article 43 of the Constitution that grants Kenyans the right to social and economic stability. So this time around, the various coalitions were not about regionalism, or it wasn't about ethnicity, negative ethnicity, as we've seen before. So already his campaign theme is uniting the nation, because the nation is under economic peril. You know, there are critical questions about surging inflation. There are critical questions about a tax regime that is extremely punitive, and joblessness of millions of young people and millions of Kenyans. At the end of the day, we have just come from a pandemic. The exiting administration has had critical issues in terms of the quality and the efficacy of governance. So he has a lot of work to unite the country. And not just to unite the country, to get the country to realize its socioeconomic goals. Mm. And that is what he will do. Before the elections were called, one of the things he did was call Honorable Raila. And they had a chat for about an hour. And they discussed that whoever who wins will be able to have an inclusive government. Whoever who loses should concede. And they have worked with Honorable Raila before. I mean, he's a political player that has been there in the field before in various positions in government. He knows his way around the political infrastructure or topography. And therefore, he will be able to navigate himself and establish the One Kenya notion under the banner of economic prosperity, which is a language that cuts across. There is no issue that is specific to a particular tribe. The issues in this country, whether them being socioeconomic or health or any other issues, are cuts across the board.
Okay.
So from the campaign theme, there's already a uniting factor. And I think that he will have the responsibility going forward to unite the country based on issues and ideals rather than the concept of tribalism.
Okay. Nurima Wako-Chiwa, if this election has, in fact, evolved, I guess is the word, from being about ethnicity or regional issues into these broader issues that affect all Kenyans, are there still chances then this may escalate into violence? Because that's been the concern, isn't it? Looking back through history, there has been a concern that things could escalate into violence.
Looking back through history, it was a concern. But I believe that the point of concern happened yesterday. Most of the tension was around the declaration of president and the fact that that has already happened. And that's why we saw a little bit of chaos. I wouldn't call it conflict. It hasn't yet escalated to the extent that we should be concerned about. For many, they were going out to the streets to celebrate. For some, they were frustrated and they did come out on the streets. But there were also some people taking advantage of the situation. Like we've already mentioned, the high cost of living, there's no employment opportunities for young people. So there's a lot of crime that happened last night. But I do believe that now that we have a way forward, the fact that Honorable Raila Odinga did have a press statement and he did not agree with the results, and they have decided that they're going to the courts, his supporters have a way forward and they are going to wait. That is one thing that we have practiced. It's taking issues and petitioning them to the court and waiting for the judiciary to give us whatever their opinion on their verdict is going to be. And Kenyans are good at that. So I do think that this is one election we have managed well as a public, and we will continue to wait and see on the way forward.
Bobby Mkangi, correct me if I'm wrong, but in 2017, the presidential vote was nullified by the Supreme Court, citing irregularities. So how is this time different or similar?
Well, one thing I have to mention is that, and perhaps, you know, in agreement with what Dennis did put out earlier, in my opinion, I think the Supreme, IEBC, the Election Management Body, this time around did put effort in ensuring that it does conduct elections as was prescribed upon nullification of the 2017 presidential elections by the Supreme Court of Kenya. And that is why we have seen a lot of infusion of transparency. We have seen a lot of infusion of inclusion of other players. We have seen the appropriate use of technology where the failure rate was very, very low. If it's the KIMS kits for verifying and identifying voters, I think it's less than 250 out of 46,000 plus that did fail. And we've seen the transmission of results digitally and available to an open IEBC portal, as the Elections Act in Kenya prescribed, coming forth. And that's why this time around, you find that many, many people were included, you know, in tallying and verifying the results, in comparing what IEBC was announcing. And at the end of the day, you look at this and you can see that IEBC has very much tried to conduct the elections as was ordered by the Supreme Court. And this is in line with the Constitution, because in nullifying the elections in 2017, the Supreme Court of Kenya actually, by all intents and purposes, ordered IEBC to conduct the then repeat election as prescribed by the Constitution. And I think this time around, despite some irregularities, which were expected, I mean, this is a human endeavor, so certain irregularities will be expected. But at the end of the day, in my assessment and up to now, yes, we wait to see what evidence those who will go to court will produce. But to my observation, as I was saying, this has been to a minimal, marginal, negligible degree. And I don't see any, you know, substantial reason why IEBC could be held to fault to the extent that it held an incredible and not free and fair election.
Okay. Dennis Ntumbi, we sort of mentioned earlier about some of the challenges facing the president-elect. Talk to me a little bit more about the state of the economy and what his plan actually is to address it.
Thank you very much. That is a vital question, and that has been the premise of his campaign platform. The fact that this country needs a socio-economic resuscitation, or a resurgent of the same. because Kenya is faced with a multiple of economic issues, many of them really pegged upon what it is that we call mismanagement within the governance sphere. Even before we got to the pandemic, which made things worse, is that, you know, there were a raft of tax increments and tax issues that came about that, you know, made the cost of living or essentially the commodities aspect. When you're looking at, you know, aspects of food items, gas, and many other things, including transport rents, they really affected the citizens of this country. And therefore, also the question of joblessness. We had almost 7 million thereabout young people or Kenyans who then have no job at all. And then also what it is that happened is that our economy moved from almost about 30% formal to almost now about 90% informal. That even if you graduate from the university, you have to start perhaps as being a welder or selling something in the streets and thereabout. So this country has major economic issues. Also, we are rearing from very expensive external debt, which is commercially based. Majority, even of our repayments thereabout, we are using that to pay our debt. So there are a raft of issues that especially are economic based that he must deal with. And the failure to deal with many of those issues, in fact, the political question was Kenya going to go the Sri Lanka way or not? Mm. But so he has to also to deal with very expensive corruption within, you know, governance spheres. And that's the reason why he was talking about the conversation and the question of instituting a quasi-judicial commission on state capture, which if you look at Transparency International, Transparency International says that the many years that Kenya has done law reforms and what it is that we call impotent anger, there is nothing much that has come out of the fight of corruption. And therefore, the way to go may be the South African way in terms of doing a quasi-judicial public hearing on state capture thereabout. So he has faced with a raft of issues, but the key that he has to deal with is the cost of living, yeah. The inability of Kenyans to put even affordable food on the table, because what has happened, for example, if I give you just a first example, is that we are unable to get something like our staple food on the table locally in the country. In January, a 50 kilogram of a bag of maize was going for about 2,900. Today, it's going for about 6,900, and it's unavailable locally. Many of the small and medium-sized millers have shut down, and as you're well aware, the exiting president had put in a subsidy program to be able to buy maize internationally and meal locally, which, again, that one has not worked because of the issue of funding.
I hear what you're saying about the cost of living crisis. We are coming to the nearing the end of the program, so I just want to throw it over before we run out of time to Nerima Waka Ochiwa, because your nonprofit works with youth political engagement in Kenya. We've talked about how youth unemployment is high. We've talked about the cost of living crisis. How hopeful are young people about the possibility of change, about the future, about the political establishment being able to offer them hope?
Many of them did not participate in this election because they do not believe that major change is going to happen. Frankly, a lot of them believed that a lot of the candidates are very similar and the same. But there has been a rise of young candidates entering politics, as many of them were kicked out during the zoning of the political party primaries, but a number of them did sail through. So there is some hope there where young people are investing in other young people in leadership, but also these conversations around perhaps we need to change how we engage young people. Zambia, in the election last year, had a high majority of young people participating, but it's also because they had the option of online registration. Mm. The IEBC is not there yet. As much as the Registrar of Political Parties does have a platform for young people to register to join parties online, that is where we can start. Because when we look at political party engagement or membership, real, true membership, young people are the minority members in our 85 political parties combined.
All right, we'll have to leave it there for time. Big thank you to all of our guests, Dennis Ntumbi, Nerima Waka Ochiwa, and Bobby Mkangi. And thank you too for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Kim Vanell, and the whole team here in Doha, bye-bye for now.